On the air at News Radio 1070 WKOK and online at WKOK.com. This is WKOK Sunrise.
I've had to wait for him for 962 times, and finally I decided I'm going to interrupt him. Oh, boy. All right. We got 24 degrees right now. Do stay tuned to Winternet. We're updating that announcement sheet about every 5 minutes or so, adding an announcement or somebody's changing their announcement. So do stay tuned for that. We have on the news line now Samantha Pearson, Executive Director of Lewisburg Neighborhoods and the Elm Street Manager in Lewisburg. And hopefully before too long we'll be talking about walking it and biking it and kayaking it and enjoying the outdoors, and if you're not already cross-country skiing or downhill skiing, or let's see, what else can you do? Snowshoeing out there, tobogganing. We have been talking to her lately and most frequently about COVID-19 and taking good care of the Lewisburg neighborhoods when it comes to COVID-19. So thank you so much for calling in, Samantha.
Good to be here, Mark.
I do appreciate that. One thing, people always have a lot of unanswered questions when they see the information we post about the state statistics. You know, one day there's zero cases, the next day there's 289 in one county, and the death numbers jump up in a particular county. What's happening when the State Department of Health has these, I would say, anomalies in what is actually probably a pretty steady flow of COVID-19 cases?
Yeah, that's sort of an ongoing and perpetual frustration and confusion. And what we're looking at when that happens is the conflict between what is known and knowable and what we want to know. So basically, there's a lot of uncertainty, and we will someday know a lot more and have a lot more precise understanding of what's happening, but it's hard to know it right away. And sometimes we get more prompt reporting than others. Other times, you know, there's a delay. And what we don't get is great consistency. Or rather, when we see, you know, big changes, we suddenly are reminded of that, of this uncertainty and lack of consistency. It's the kind of thing where, to be honest, in a given year, they don't usually certify or, you know, say for certain how many people either got or died of the flu for like 12 months, right? They don't figure that out.
There's no flu dashboard.
Well, there is actually. There is a flu dashboard. It's called ILI Index. It's called the Influenza-Like Illness Index. But that dashboard is a rough estimate and is put forward that way, and the like I said, sort of more of the certified numbers are not established for a long time. So with COVID, we are looking at an immediate dashboard. They're trying to put information out, and I'm glad they do, but we also have to sort of take those numbers with a grain of salt. If people think back to the very beginning of December, there were sudden reports that, you know, Montour County was having, you know, astronomical rates of new cases, and it was kind of like, okay, either 20% of Montour County is currently ill with COVID, or something else is happening, right? You know, so you look at the numbers and you say, I'm going to take this with a grain of salt. What the one error people make with that is they decide they're going to throw out all the numbers, that none of them are useful in any way. And I would argue that it's somewhere in between. I would like to have more precise and accurate numbers, but we also just need to acknowledge the vagueness and think of the numbers more as an index that gives us a general sense than a precise count, like this is exactly the ticker we have.
Well, and I think I'll ask you to answer the same question our listeners have put on our posts regularly. Why do you even post it if it has a disclaimer that these aren't up to date or necessarily accurate or really even helpful? Why even
right.
do
so,
it?
So the real question is that it's better to have some index than no index. So even if, you know, and that index is not useless, but, for example, I'm actually not a big fan of the reporting of the single number each day. I would rather have, and I've been, you know, working with people locally to track those single numbers and then graph them and calculate what the running average is, like a 7-day and a 14-day running average, that smooths out a lot of the irregularities. Now, it still doesn't make the reporting any faster or more consistent. So we know one of the things it smooths out is that weekends are always a dip, right? I actually have some people who have had interactions with the medical profession in the past may be familiar with this in other settings. Like, I actually had a child at the beginning of a long weekend a long, long time ago, and in a hospital. And, you know, shift changes and low staffing made that a very interesting experience, right? It was sort of a weird 3 days to be at the hospital. And similarly, when we look at the data, the data gets reported each day for the 24 hours before, as of noon or so, it varies from state to state, but it's for the day before. So our reporting on Sundays and Mondays, which are supposedly for the cases more or less from Saturdays and Sundays, is much lower. There's a dip pretty much every week everywhere. Israel would have different weekly dips because their weekend runs differently. So that's just something we can know, and if you average it out, that doesn't mean as much. Now, the separate thing is, are those really the cases that were reported, and when did those cases happen, right? Because we know there's delays in all of this, and this is even true with deaths. And it's actually that everything is on a delay even further. So, again, we still want to know. We want to know what those trend lines are. So I've been, keeping those, tracking them, looking at the trends. And even if I don't know the precise number when I look at the graph, I can see the slope of the graph. I can see which direction it's moving, up or down, whether I'm looking at the incidence rate, which is telling me whether the slope is getting steeper or less steep, or I can look at the cumulative case rate, or I can look at the death rate, and because those are the things I am graphing. While we get these weird anomalies with knowing cases, we also know we're not catching anywhere near all the cases anyway, right? There are a lot of asymptomatic cases that are going undiagnosed completely, cases that never get tested, and so when we get a sudden dump of confirmed positives, I'm like, okay, this is messing with my graphs, but I'm still looking at roughly the same thing. You know, I have a trend in case numbers, and I have a trend in death numbers. The deaths are also going up. You know, I don't expect there to be also a spike in deaths, but you could even have a spike in deaths, because the deaths are also delayed. I don't know if anyone, is watching Lycoming County in particular, but the coroner up there he's a fairly public person, a public presence, and he will report in public meetings or even on Twitter that, he has X number of COVID deaths, and it doesn't match the number that is reported locally. And right now, it's a lot higher, right? He has more deaths that he knows about from COVID than are in the ticker so far. And that, again, is another one of these data uncertainties. It doesn't mean the deaths haven't happened or the reason for the death is up in the air. It's about the process of reporting. It's literally paperwork that has to be filled out. Things have to be certified. So, like I was saying with flu, it can take a really long time for this. If you look at national and international data, when they look at deaths over the course of, years, say, for example, looking at, we talk about deaths from all causes. If you look at the charts, usually there's this extreme drop-off at the very end of the graph, and that's not because suddenly people stop dying. It's because we don't have as much data from basically the previous 6 weeks. There's more and more data as you go back, and they usually have a disclaimer that the last 2 weeks you might as well just ignore completely. So that's the challenge. We want to know what's happening. We want to know as quickly as possible, but there are limits to our ability to know.
Well, let me ask you this then. So the statistics you have to really study them and know what you're looking at. What is the state of the pandemic? I'm optimistic, and it seems as though we're doing much better in many categories. We just have to keep doing what we're doing. Am I seeing that right?
you are correct that numbers appear to be going down all over the world in the original sort of main strain of the virus. Part of that is there are many different reasons for that, but basically one of them is, you know, we had a season in which we had a really hard time doing what we were supposed to do, and a lot of people gathered, so we had sort of bumps all over the world for the holidays, and we're resuming something of our trajectory, but we're also getting to where there are places that have had a lot of people get sick, and that may be slowing the virus down somewhat. Some people, whether they've they're developing immunity by getting sick or by getting vaccinated. In our area, you know, the vaccination levels are pretty low still. I don't have the numbers directly in front of me, but it's probably somewhere in the 5 to 10% range. And then the immunity levels are, again, uncertain because we don't catch all the cases, but they could be anywhere from 15 to, you know, 40%, even in our area. We just aren't sure. So we're starting to get around 50% probably of people exposed to that original strain. The catch is that behind that dropping set of numbers, which is so encouraging, is that there is a new variant or many new variants, and they are at the very beginning end. You can think of it like back in March of last year when everyone was so... it was so hard to convince people that we had an imminent problem. They were like, well, there are only a few cases. It's really not a big deal. Trying to explain that if you extrapolate out the exponential growth curve of those few cases, it's like the leading toe of a monster on the graph. You know,
it's only a little toe. Come on now.
Right. It's like, you know, the boa constrictor that ate an elephant, right? So it starts really skinny and then it's suddenly very fat on the graph. We're basically overlaying the beginning of that kind of graph for some of these variants. And so places like Denmark, which had committed actually to sequencing the genome of every positive case a couple months ago in their country, is tracking that. And even though their numbers are coming down and they feel like, everyone feels like, it looks like it's getting better, they're also able to track that the variant cases are rising in an ominous pattern, like that so it hasn't broken out, it hasn't started to dominate, but they do expect it to dominate. And that creates this weird psychological situation, which has been, again, the case with this virus all along. It's always on a delay. What you're looking at out your window one minute is not what's actually happening.
Right,
you know, what you have the ability to see is not what you should actually be responding to. And that's unfortunate because we don't do well with that.
I always like to use the illustration of the fishing boat that has the depth finder at the back of the boat. You know,
right.
It tells you the depth of where you've been. Okay, we have to stop it there, but if folks want more information, go to lewisburgneighborhoods.org. I see that there is a new, I got a push notification a little while ago that there was a new Radio Free Lewisburg episode, so we invite folks to check that out, and Samantha's going to be back at 7:40 or so with more information. But this idea of a number of people have been exposed to the virus, and quite a few people have gotten it, and many have died. What percentage of our population has gotten COVID-19 in the U.S. or locally? Do we know that number?
We don't. We have estimates. And so, again, as with all the numbers, we have a better idea of how many people had it, you know, a couple months ago, and... once you get to now, if you look at sites like covidestim.org, which uses the Johns Hopkins data and then does running estimates for to figure out how many cases we're missing. And when I say we're missing, means we are not knowing have happened, right? It's not that they don't exist or like we are not catching. And that site can help you with that, although they actually also give graphic indications of that uncertainty, and it's kind of, it might be hard to read if you're not used to looking at graphs. They actually have error zones, and they get wider and wider as you come closer and closer to the present, basically. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's kind of like the cone of certainty for a hurricane. A lot of things could happen within there, including none of the things that you see there. Okay, so we don't know. We can't definitively say that it's 10% of the population has had it or something in that range.
Well, we think it's definitely more than 10 because we now have at least that many who have had a confirmed case. We know we have sort of floors for it. And it tends to go up from there. Although the uncertainty, I will admit, is rendered in both directions. So,
well, and I like many people say, I think I had it in January last year because I had this lingering cough and occasional fevers and so on before it was popular to get COVID. So,
those would be among the uncaptured cases. Catch is that what we're seeing from testing in places like South Africa and Britain is that even if you had it, had the first strain, you can get some of the newer strains.
Of course, I haven't had the antibody test that would answer that question, so this is our fate. Okay, so back up to reality, as they say. Mitigation, we've got a lot of folks, well, we have a limited number of people have been vaccinated. We've had 10% of the population, at least, that has had it. But we are keeping up masking, distancing, hygiene, avoiding group gatherings. That much is continuing.
It is, and I know I've been hearing people are like, you can't just keep saying that. You know, because people won't listen. I'm like, well, I sort of have to keep saying it because it's true. I'm a little bit stumped by the, you know, people can't do this. And I will admit that I have a sort of, you know, slightly different personality maybe. Like, if I have to stay up really late or, you know, I don't drink coffee just because I don't drink coffee, I just stay up. So, you know, I think this is similar. It's like, this is what we have to do. So I'm like, okay, fine, I'm doing it. Other people, it doesn't strike that way. And but yes, right now, as we are working to get, you know, more and more people vaccinated and to deal with the variants, we need to continue to protect our community and our hospital capacity. Even with those numbers going down in the hospitalizations, we know they can go back up. There's nothing that's preventing them from going back up. So, except for us doing what they're calling NPIs, non-pharmaceutical interventions, or all the things we've been asked to do all along, mass distancing, hygiene, avoiding crowds and indoor gatherings, and isolating if you've been exposed, have a positive test, or have symptoms. You know, that huge constellation of stuff, and I just keep saying it over and over. I give more new detail about masks. I've got all sorts of additional information about masks, and even the CDC finally came out yesterday with more detail about masks as well. I don't have the references yet to the CDC stuff, but to the studies the CDC is now acknowledging. I do have that. There are two recent posts about masks on our website, which we hadn't talked about for months and months and months in detail.
Okay, so, yeah, double masking is part of that. Not so much that two masks are perfect, it's just that then you're a little bit more certain to have a tight fit and to really be breathing through it, not just breathing around it, which isn't as ideal. So folks can check that out at lewisburgneighborhoods.org. What about the vaccine rollout? You know, I'm a patient person, so I think things are going satisfactorily. I'm not supposed to get mine, you know, for a while. So, is it really muddled, or is this what
we... Oh, thank you. I'm so glad to hear you say that, Mark. That's such a rational way of, you know, rational attitude. It is interesting. It is muddled. There is a critical path, you know, different things that need to fall into place as we move forward. And I would point out that, you know, we've been set up with inadequate supply. We have a huge demand and a limited supply, and that creates its own set of problems. So the current administration is really working, pushing all the levers they have to increase supply. And that can mean using the Defense Production Act in order to make sure the right kind of syringes are being produced, in order to get the little glass vials that the vaccine gets, you know, packaged in order to, you know, have enough additional gloves and PPE for the people who are administering the vaccines all over the country and all over the world. So they're doing those things to help make sure there aren't any limiting factors that could be mitigated in the supply chain so that we can ramp up supply. The unfortunate thing is, it's both fortunate and unfortunate. I'm glad so many people want to get the vaccine. But more people should be like you, Mark, and be patient. So if you have the ability to, still hunker down and reduce your exposure and, protect yourself and others, you should do that while you wait for your chance to get the vaccine. We have these tiers of who can get it when. And, 1A, they started out with that initial rollout of long-term care facilities and healthcare workers. That was great. We knew what order we wanted to do people in, but we didn't finish that group, and in particular long-term care facilities people, before we expanded that tier. And that has, and we expanded the tier without having enough supply, so that created the problem we have. That happened all over the country to differing degrees. Some places have more and fewer healthcare workers. Some places have more and fewer proportion of the population in long-term care facilities. So that has had disparate impact in different parts of the country. Some of the smaller states have had an easier time, literally because they have fewer people to deal with, to be honest. But being patient means once we get the supply taken care of, then we can move on to the, sort of the sign up, the getting people enrolled. We can make that work better, and then we actually get to move on to things like messaging. I'm hoping to be out of this business in a couple months because there will be clear public messaging, sort of uniform public messaging, and I won't be having to do it.
We'll talk about kayaking.
Right.
Okay, well, anything else? Another minute left, but anything else to add? Really, so much information. We really could break this down and really go into the variants that exist out there. But
the one thing I want to say about the variant for people is, or the variants, is that the virus multiplies every time someone gets sick. It gets to multiply in their body, and then it gets to other people and multiplies in their body. Every multiplication, not even every person getting sick, but every new viral particle in your body is a lottery ticket for the virus, and it's trying to, come up with mutations that will make it more effective at infecting people and spreading around the world. So the fewer people that get sick, the fewer variants we will have to deal with. We want to not keep buying virus lottery tickets.
So we're part of the problem. If we're not mitigating, we're part of the we're the nurturers of this variant.
Yes, basically, we are our own worst enemy in that respect. So that's another reason to really try not to have it spread wildly. If we can get people vaccinated, we do think they'll still be spreading, but at a much lower level, and it will be more manageable. That will we can achieve the same herd immunity safely with vaccines.
To be continued. LewisburgNeighborhoods.org. Samantha, thank you so much for the information. If there's any key updates anywhere along the line, just let us know, and we'll add those to our morning conversations, and we'll have you back on in a couple of 2-3 weeks with another update. Thank you so much, Samantha.
Good to talk to you, Mark. Bye.
Lewisburg Neighborhoods Corporation Executive Director Samantha Pearson, Walk It, Bike It Coordinator. That's why I mentioned kayaks. In years past, we typically talked about making sure that bicycling as a commuting method was brought up and talked about and discussed as viable, and bikeways and pathways and community standards were set up for this and talked about, and other big aspects of our community. But she'll be back on at the beginning of next month to talk about COVID-19.